very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are down, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey, everybody, Tim Kawakami here. This is 49ers Plus Minus with my co-host. That's Matt Barrows of The Athletic. We are here where there's silence on the 49ers. They shut down minicamp. So we thought this would be a good time. You know, things are going to be quiet for a long time until July 24, 25 when training camp starts. And it will be daily from there. Some of it will be from Australia, but it will still be daily. This is the quiet time. This is when everybody kind of regroups and gets ready for the long haul. Let's recap the offseason, Matt Barrows. Let's hand out some awards, or there's just categories. I'm not quite sure exactly how to frame this. It's offseason awards on our headline there. Let's just kind of make sure we know where the 49ers are, what they've done, the draft, free agency, these camp practices, going into training camp, what's important, who's important, why it's important. But first, the most important person of all, no matter what, all discussion must start and end with Brandon Ayuk. Matt Barrows, the latest little kerfuffle, obviously raised by Brandon Ayuk, since he's the only one doing it, since the 49ers aren't doing much of anything. I guess he's saying they're scared of him, or something scared, whatever. You would like the 49ers to release him, I'm sure, but all he has to do is report, and I'm pretty sure they'll release him. He has not done that. Matt Barrows, your thoughts?
Well, I think there is a process to this. He, I don't think just reporting would take care of it. He's on this reserve left squad list. So That's like this limbo list. As long as he's on that list, the 49ers don't have to do anything with him. He doesn't count against their offseason roster. He doesn't count against the 53-man roster. He doesn't get paid a penny. He's not on the team, but he is on the team. Like I said, it's sort of a he's in this purgatory position. And I believe that he has to petition the league. He has to request reinstatement to the league and the 49ers. And so, to my knowledge, that hasn't happened yet. So it's not like he can just show up and, demand to take part in practice or something like that. He's not on their 90-man roster at this point. So that's the first step. And I don't know. I think that's perfunctory, but it still needs to happen at some point. But the bottom line is that if he's still on that list, then he can go on social media all he wants. The 49ers don't have to do anything. All they have to do is kind of tolerate him, doing his cryptic message type of thing on social media every now and then. Now, when Deebo Samuel did this and when he did this in the past, there was something at stake. They were on the roster. The 49ers were counting on those guys to be part of their upcoming squad. They're not counting on Brandon Ayuk. I mean, he's as good as gone in their minds, but they're not going to acquiesce. They're certainly not going to bend over backwards to do anything for him at this point. And as we've said all along, they want something in return. Now, what they want and how easy it would be to get that, I'm not exactly sure, but I still think that that's eventually how this ends. Sign and trade. You've said it in the past, some sort of contract or some sort of agreement between the Commanders and the 49ers that, okay, we'll send you a 2028-6 that can improve to a fifth if he does this, and this this season. So I don't think it would take much ultimately, but the 49ers are not going to be the ones that actively try to get this done. The ball's in his court.
That's a great point. Obviously, when I just say report to camp, yeah, do all the process you have to do to report to camp, whatever paperwork that happens. Then that is what forces the 49ers to either put you on the 90-man roster or release you. One or the other, they don't have to do that. I guess just listening to you, and you make a great point, I would just say it just materializes in my mind. In order to put pressure on a team, the team has to care about you. They have to worry about whether you have value or not. They want you to play or whatever. That's what big contract disputes in the past. That's the one in 2024 with Brandon Ayuk was about, was like, we want you to play. So you being mad at us worries us. because we want, you're such a good player. That's a long time ago. There is no pressure on them. They don't really care. They would like to, you know, it doesn't cost them anything. You put them on a reserve list. Yeah, you really are off in nowhere. That's the wrong time to try to put pressure on a team. That actually is when you might want to fake being happy with them, being nice to them. So they go, you know what? It doesn't matter to us. It's better for you to go off. Why don't you go off and find your next career, your next team? And this is a very strange time to be trying to exert the most kind of social media pressure. But that's where he is. That's where his mind's at. You know, just compare it to Trent Williams. It's incredible pressure. He's not saying, he never said anything right during any of these negotiations, but it's just this looming presence. Gotta have Trent, right? Gotta have Trent. We'll be worse without Trent. So let's pay him all the money that paid him with three contracts now, because he's worth it, even going into his age 38 season. This is the vast difference between those two. And you can't negotiate it any more, you know, incoherently than the way that's happening right now. You can afford Niners, I think, at some point are like, you know what, because you've been so bizarre with us, we're just going to make you work through it to the fullest extent that we can make you. And that's what they're doing past the draft, past the OTAs, past, you know, this another period. I assume it'll be over at some point before training camp, but who knows? It might go into that, and it just doesn't matter. And I guess the part I roll my eyes is that 49er fans or whoever get all hot and bothered by this. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. And Brandon Ayuk has shown, if it mattered to the Commanders, who seem to be the only team have much interest in him, and we're just assuming that we don't, but if it really mattered to them, they would have given him a 7th round pick by now, right? They would have done something. That hasn't happened. Then this thing continues because it doesn't really matter for the 49ers and probably in the grand scheme of the NFL. It just doesn't matter. No, he turns into a good player next season, then it starts to matter again. It's not now. And also, I've been getting some, oh, yeah, they wanted to do this and preserve his contract for his next team. Matt Barrows, you and I know this. He is not going to be playing on that contract next season. That contract is gone. There will be a new contract for a lot less money wherever he goes. That was a contract he negotiated with the 49ers when he was coming off a 1,300-yard season, was a young key piece of a Super Bowl team. That is not who he is now. The guarantees have been thrown away by him, not by the 49ers. That contract's gone. There is no that $120 million contract no longer exists in any real form other than it just exists on a piece of paper because he's still tied to the 49ers. So that's more than I want to talk about Ayuk, but I'm glad we got into it. I'm glad you made that point. We want to do off-season awards. That's what we want to do, Matt Barrows. Let's start. We got about 5 categories. We're going to pick some players. We're going to pick some moves that kind of summarize this offseason and point to training camp. Matt Barrows. What was the biggest offseason move by the 49ers?
I'm a little worried that we're going to be in agreement on all of these. It won't be interesting, but
I know. I'll switch mine if you do the one.
All right, yeah, we'll toggle. Yeah. We'll do serpentine back and forth. So, you know, Mike Evans is the biggest move in my mind because he's a veteran wide receiver. He's proven it, and more to the point, he didn't have a great season last year. You know, his first non-1,000-yard season in the NFL, broke his clavicle, only played half the year. And he said the other day he's ready to prove himself again. And he wanted a fresh start. He wanted sort of this idea of rebirth. I think that, you know, the 49ers can benefit from that. Now, are they going to benefit long-term? Is this like a 5-year, you know, guy that they're going to have? No, probably the only benefit is going to be in 2026, but that's good because the other half of that equation is that he's a great mentor for all the young players, particularly Dejon Stribling, the guy that they used as their top pick. So it's just a smart move. You can see why they did it. Apparently had a very, very impressive spring. All the major players were kind of buzzing about him. He was sort of the storyline inside the 49ers locker room. So I think that that's a big deal. Obviously with everybody, especially in that room, health is going to be the big thing, but it seems like he's not just Mike Evans, but it's a refocused Mike Evans. Mike Evans, who's looking for a change, who's looking for sort of a third act, I would say, in his career. And it begins with the 49ers.
And I've heard sources say that some people in there think he's the first veteran receiver they've had in there since Emmanuel Sanders. Oh, wait a minute. George Kittle said that to us at the podium. And we could all take the meaning into that as you might. I think, you know, maybe not a direct shot at Brandon Ayuk, but not an indirect shot at Brandon Ayuk either, that this is a guy other players can follow. You know, he wants to be a leader. He has the credibility. He walks the walk, talks the talk. And, you know, they haven't really had that from the receiver room. They've had good players, no question. Production, 1,000-yard receivers, three of them, Ayuk, Debo, Juwan Jennings. But they're all not there, and there's reasons they're all not there, even though they're young enough to still be with the 49ers. They're just not there. My biggest offseason move, I had Evans slash or this one. I'll go with this one, Oso Odigizuwa trade. Third-round pick, that's not a little trade, right? That's a pretty, you know, third-round pick with Romello Hyde is somebody they're counting on essentially to start, you know, pass rusher starter. You know, he'll get starter snaps, I would imagine, in their minds at least. So that's not a little thing to trade. And Odigizuwa is somebody that fills a void they've had for a while, right? I keep saying it. Since they traded DeForest Buckner, they have not really had that playmaking defensive tackle who kind of makes everything else go, pushes the pocket, plays the run. They've tried other people. They've sunk a lot of resources into it. Odigizuwa could be that guy, you know, a playmaking defensive tackle who is just there every day, like Buckner was, played every snap, played every game, who you can just rely on, and you can say, okay, this team is not going to run up the middle on us because we've got him. Now they've got Fred Warner and other people, but just that reliable. Like this, I think the great disappointment they had in Javon Hargrave, I should say, who they paid a lot of money from, is he wasn't reliable. Like he'd make a play, and then the rest of the game, you really wouldn't feel him. If they can feel Odigizuwa all game long for 17 games and into playoffs, I think it's going to be a notable difference. And I think it's a great thing for Alfred Collins and CJ West and Grayson Halton, the rookie, to just kind of, there's the leader. DeForest Buckner was the leader. He pushed people because of who he was and the way he played. I think Odigizuwa has that mindset, that mentality to be able to do something like that. That's mine. All right, next category. What's the biggest concern going into training camp? In a similar vein. I'll go this one. A similar vein. I do think it's a pass rush. You know, league low, 20 sacks last year. A lot of that was because Bosa was hurt, no question. And I think Bosa should be fine for at least, you know, midway through camp. We'll see. It's multiple ACL tears for him, so you never know. I think he'll be good. But that other side, that's been the weak spot. They've tried different things. They're hoping Raheem Morris can provide more energy there. Romello Hyde is, you know, he does look like he's talented enough to play there. Maybe get you 6 to 8 sacks. They haven't had that. We'll see, though. We don't know. You know, he's a 25-year-old rookie. I don't know that he's going to get you 15 ever or 12. Can he get 10? I don't know. But, you know, in that, you know, Leonard Floyd role, there's been other guys. Can he be better than that? I don't know that. And maybe Odigizuwa helps. Maybe Alfred Collins' development helps. Maybe Mykel Williams helps. But I'm not so sure. I think they'll get more than 20, but you kind of need 35, 40, right, to really be a big-time defense. That's what they did when they were really good. 20 is a lot. It's a low bar to start at. So I'll say the pass rush, and we'll see what Raheem Morris can cook up. We know that the Falcons' defense was a good pass rush team last year. Can he do the same thing, different kinds of players? But if they don't have a big pass rush, they're going to get a hit in a lot of different ways like they were last year.
Yeah, that's why the safeties struggled like they did. There was no pass rush that kind of helped them out all season. That was mine too, and I don't have a plan B to go to, so I'm just going to augment what you said. The Denver Broncos last year finished with 68 sacks. The 49ers had 20. And let's just say that Nick Bosa is healthy for 17 games and he adds, you know, 12 to 15 sacks. That still only gets you into the mid-30s, and that's still bottom 10 in the league last year. So, yeah, I just don't, you know, as you said, Odigizuwa will have an effect. Bosa has a domino effect that the guy on the other side, I think Bryce Huff, for example, would have had more sacks too. But they lost Huff, and so they basically replaced Huff with Romello Height. So that edge position is still weak, and you're counting on two guys coming back from ACLs. One of those guys is on his third ACL, and the second of those guys only had one sack last year anyway.
Mykel Williams. Yep.
Mykel Williams, right. And I think a theme for this team is that the 49ers, inside the 49ers building, they love last year's draft. They love the 25 draft. They think that Alfred Collins is going to be great. They think that Mykel Williams is going to be special. And maybe they're right, but we just haven't seen it yet. And so they're relying on that faith that they really hit that 25 draft out of the park. And I mean, they're obviously seeing things. They're seeing things in practice. They're seeing things behind the scenes. This is what these guys do for a living. So their insight into, you know, who these guys could become is better than ours, but we still haven't seen it yet. And until I see it, I just don't agree with their faith that they have that it's naturally going to get a lot better. So we're on the same page on biggest concern heading into the summer.
I do want to point out that the interesting flip, I thought they were going to go trade for a pass rusher. I thought it was going to be Max Crosby, or guessed that it might be. It could have been go after Trey Hendrickson. It could have been various other, like, established for sure, write them down, 10 sacks guys. Like, they were out there this year. And instead, the 49ers used their biggest capital to trade for Odigizuwa. Again, I get it. I thought they had drafted Collins and CJ West to make sure they didn't have to do that. And they decided they did. Again, third round pick's not crazy. And Crosby was going to take two first round picks, or after the Ravens returned him, I bet you he could have got him for one first. But I get the salaries and all these other things. But I thought they would address the pass rush first and foremost, no matter what, and trade for somebody. And we saw that Max Crosby was available. Instead, it flipped over to, you know, don't give up your first round pick. Actually, trade out of the first round pick. That was later. Don't trade your first round pick or two first rounds or whatever it would have cost. And then use your third round, one of your third round picks to trade for Odigizuwa. Use one of the third round picks to draft Romello Height. Different way to approach it, different kind of approach. And we saw what the Rams did. Slightly different approach. They had a better pass rush than the 49ers, and then add Myles Garrett to it. It's kind of a 49ers move of 4 years ago, and they didn't do it. I understand they did not have a Jared Verse to do it, but they didn't put that big investment in the edge. They put it a little bit more on defensive tackle. I would have a concern about maybe that materializes, maybe it does. All right, next category. What's the biggest difference from now, June 2026, to June 2025? Where are the 49ers the most different?
I would say speed-wise, and there's an asterisk to that because, you know, they had a lot of the same guys on the roster last year, but they got hurt early on. So, you know, you added Stribling, you have Cowing, you have Jordan Watkins, you've got Pearsall, who's not, you know, a 4-3 guy, but he's got speed. If that group, and then Christian Kirk, who is a 4-3 guy, or at least was when he was drafted. So you've got some guys that ought to be able to do stuff with the ball in their hands and ought to be able to kind of stretch the field. They need to stay healthy, obviously. But if they can, this group seems to have certainly more downfield ability. And we saw that a little bit in the spring. There was one of those days that it was just fireworks. They were just throwing one deep ball after the other, and most of them were connecting. And I would extend that to running back as well. Last year, the 49ers were so unhappy with their backup running back situation that they traded for a guy, Brian Robinson. I forget, it was the last week of August. The regular season was coming. Not exactly a burner at that position. I think it was clear that Christian McCaffrey, as well as he did, and the yards were fantastic, he propped the team up for three quarters of the season. But, you can see him starting to lose some of that burst. And, the explosive plays weren't there, et cetera, et cetera. I think that they're excited about their two backups at that spot. They've got young legs. I was surprised that Jordan James, who's going into his second year, is actually 2.5 years younger than Kalen Black, who's the rookie. So fit guys at that spot, there should be more explosion all around, wide receiver and running back.
And at the end of last season, Shanahan said that, right? We need to get faster. We do need to get faster. We'll see if it plays, but they should be faster. Stribling is fast. They went after some guys who have a little more dynamic, and we shall see how that works. That goes with younger, that goes with healthier, that goes with a lot of things. I'm going to say the difference is kind of team confidence. And this is never a team that lacks for confidence. But remember all the questions we were asking them, the veterans, last year at this time, after all these free agent departures and cuts? And they said, no, we doesn't really think about that. That doesn't really affect the locker room. We're still who we are. And I understood at the time, as a brave face, you're not going to say we're shattered by this. But what do they say now, Barros? You know what? As Trent Williams, my guy, said, last year was a shitstorm. That's what he said. Other players, you know what? It's so much better to be adding veterans than to be losing them. And it could have been really bad last year. After a bad 2024, then they cut everybody, don't make any major additions, and they go 12-5 and win a playoff game. I think there's a satisfaction in that isn't like, okay, we're set, it's great. It was just, a win in divisional round game, and then they get stomped by the team that would go on to win the Super Bowl, the Seahawks, which are in your own division. But it's just more like a realization that last year could have gone bad too. And there were actually more reasons to go bad because they had almost the same amount of injuries as they had the year before. Not McCaffrey, though. That is the important one. I think that McCaffrey and Trent have proven they're the two most essential guys out of a lot of essential guys. But I just sensed, just from their words and just from the way that Shanahan and Lynch operated this offseason, that there is a, let's just say, renewal of who they are, who they always thought they were, but it got a little shaky there. And they conducted this offseason in a very confident way. They're never lacking in swagger, but I think going through that discarding a year ago, I called it a purge. They don't like that, but it was. Took a lot of guts. They weren't entirely sure it was going to work from the locker room all the way down, all the way up. But having gotten through it, and they feel like they have a bunch of new young players who learned from that last year, and then you had another draft, whatever. I think that's a little different feel I get from this team.
Well, I would add to that, They obviously were worried at this time last year. Shanahan had that meeting with veterans. Yep, Basically, the meeting was, it's up to you guys. We gotta kind of change our expectations this year. But then they ended up winning 12 games. Yep. Like, they had this, we've got to really make some magic happen this season because we don't have a loaded roster this year, et cetera, et cetera. But they were good. So, my point is that I feel like that pressure helped them in some ways. And I agree with you. Christian McCaffrey was key. Mac Jones was key. And Robert Saleh was probably key. Yep. That defense had nothing. That team had no business winning 12 games and going into Philadelphia and winning a playoff game there. No business. You kind of read the play-by-play on what happened in the offseason, and then on top of that, what happened in the season, absolutely no business winning 12 games. My point is that, this team is better. It's got more competition, more training camp battles. I wrote about that this week. But that doesn't mean that they're going to be good. I mean, you just don't know from season to season. And one thing I've learned covering this team, one season does not lead into the next. There is a definite demarcation from year to year. And I don't think that you can say, oh, 12 wins with all that bad luck and that lack of depth that last year, that's got to mean 15 wins this year. That's not how it works.
And, or you could say, listen, coming off a Super Bowl in 2023, then
everything's going to be great. Back to the big game, all they need to do is win.
They're
going to
win a Super Bowl by 50 points if they just make a little few improvements, and that is not what happened.
Exactly. All right, so I'm just saying, last year's last year. I don't think that there's much continuation, even with kind of the rookies to the second year players. For every rookie that kind of shows something in year one and then builds on it in year two, there's a rookie that looked good in year one and then takes a step backwards. Renardo Green is a great example of that. That's somebody that they had their eye on this year. They didn't think that he played as well as a second year player as he did as a first year player. You never know. And Alfred Collins has been dealing with a shoulder injury. He's not going to be, he didn't take part in any of the spring practices. He should be back at the beginning of training camp, but you can easily see that being a case where, we had these high expectations for Collins, but, he had this injury. He didn't have the off season, and that's why he kind of looked like he was taking a step backwards. That's how these things happen. We'll see.
Barros wasn't just crapping all over my answer, which I will say the 49ers are thinking like this is a building. Like you are crapping over them. This is their mentality.
I absolutely am.
And sometimes there is a carryover, not a carryover in play, just a carryover in attitude. This is who we are. And sometimes there isn't. What I'm saying, and again, it's not contradictory to what you were saying, although it sounds like it, is that they're feeling very good about themselves in a different way than they did going in last year. But last year got them 12-5. So maybe you want a little edginess, right? Maybe you want a little nerves. Maybe
that's
you want.
That's what I said. That's what I think. You trumpet the company line. And I'll challenge.
I'm all over that.
All right, Tim. Which player is under the most pressure this year as we go from spring to summer?
Yeah, a lot of themes here that we've said, and I'll just say it. I think Mykal Williams is under a lot of pressure just to be good. You know, rookie year, he showed some things, did not rush the passer very well. I don't think he came in advertised as a guy who's going to do that consistently. But you need a little something from him and in a kind of consolidated pass rush feel. Got hurt. I think they still really like him. I think he's a big-time guy, personality. First-round pick was not a low first-round pick. This is a player they've wanted to be part of their foundation, their next wave of stars. When we talk about how much they love last year's draft, and Mykal Williams is the lead case of that, and they do love last year's draft. They've built a lot of their belief in the future on last year's draft. They hate it when we say, I don't know if I see a Pro Bowler out of there, but I don't. I don't know if I see one. Mykal Williams should have the most ability to do that. We'll see. He's going to have to get some sacks. They're going to have to. Just be a guy. Be a guy that you notice every single time the 49ers defense is on the field. Maybe not making the play, but he's beating his guy. They can't run because there's Mykal Williams over there. He's teaming with Nick Bosa and Romello Hyde or whoever else is on that line with Odigizua, and you get an Armstead feel. I think Eric Armstead is kind of the top end. And Armstead got criticized from 49er fans. He was a really good player and got a little hurt there when he really could have been reaching his peak. But I think Mykal Williams, didn't Armstead have 12 sacks one year? If Mykal Williams can approximate that effect on a game, I think the 49ers would be well served. And I think if he doesn't, this would be 2 years now. Now, he's still a young player. He's not a 25-year-old rookie last year. He was a 21-year-old rookie. So he's still quite young. But I just think that you want to see a healthy year and you want to see a productive year. You want to see that jump. It's year two of a draft that really, really 49ers have circled and is true. It is super important for this franchise. And he's kind of got to be a near Pro Bowler, not necessarily this year, but he's got to be moving in that direction, I think.
Just checking your numbers on Eric Armstead, 10 sacks in the regular season in 2019. Let's see if he had any in the off season that year.
Yes,
he had two. Post-season. You're right. 12. Post-season.
Post-season. Not in the off season. Off season sacks don't count.
Post-season regular sacks. And post-season.
I know he had a very productive year one of those years. So, all right. What's your choice, Barros?
Oh, I'm going with the same guy I would have picked last year, Ricky Pearsall. Keeps teasing us with all sorts of great games and great routes, but obviously has not strung together a full season yet. And there's a lot at stake for him, and he sort of represents this next generation of wide receivers. I mean, the 49ers are resetting wide receivers, and you know, he's the young guy of the group. And I think that the 49ers brought him in for a lot of reasons. I think he's different than the three that we referenced earlier, Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, and Juwan Jennings, in that the 49ers don't anticipate a tough negotiation with him. I don't know if that was part of, you know, bringing him in, but he's handpicked by Kyle Shanahan. And to this point, he hasn't really delivered. Excuse me.
Whoa.
And that brought up some emotions here. So, you know, he's got to do that. And, you know, I think their idea for the future is Pearsall and Stribling. These are the two guys. They both picked around the same spot. They were both picked higher than consensus had them being picked. They're both, you know, Kyle Shanahan favorites, and they're both like good guys, like good, Pearsall is well liked by everyone. He's the nicest guy in that locker room. Stribling is the son of a Marine. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's this idea that we're going to bring in some like really nice guys, and we hope that they are also productive guys. So it's kind of testing the 49ers' new way of doing business. So far, obviously, Pearsall has been good at times, but not good for a full season.
All right. Our final category, Pearsall, good, solid selection. And about the same age as Kalen Black, by the way. So you're going to his third year. Kalen Black, I'm sorry. You're taking a lot of...
We have to call him Kalen Green. Kalen Gray. He's going to be getting some gray in the beard at some point.
All right. Final category. Who is the most likely surprise next season, this coming season? I think... Did I go first that one? Yeah. You're going first. Yeah, most likely surprise.
No. You went... you did go first. I'm going to say, I'm going to throw out a few names, but the one that sort of jumped out at me in the spring was, this is getting back to Mike Evans, is that early in the OTA, apparently Luke Gifford ran into Mike Evans, and Luke Gifford suffered a concussion. That's why Luke Gifford wasn't on the field for the two practices that we saw. So Luke Gifford was the strong side linebacker last year. We all know what happened in the Rams game. The second time they played, they just picked on Luke Gifford the entire game. Well, without Luke Gifford in the lineup, they put in Jaden Duggar, the fifth round rookie there. And I think that they were pleased with what they saw. I don't think when they drafted him, they thought that, okay, this is a project. This is a guy who played at Georgetown for a couple of seasons, Louisiana. He's only spent 1 year as a true linebacker. It's going to take a while for him to learn how to play in the NFL. But I think that they were encouraged by what they saw in the spring. And I think they were encouraged, A, by the obvious traits there. He's a tall, long guy that – you know, can jump and who can run. He's something like 245 pounds. Their biggest linebacker, maybe their fastest linebacker. He should be able to cover tight ends pretty well. So I think that for that position, the strong side position, it's going to be a more – I got the impression that KJ Wright and Raheem Morris see kind of more a dynamic role for that player. Like move him around. He's rushing the passer some downs. He's dropping into coverage some downs. He's more of an X factor than what's been in the past. And Duggar seems to fit that role. So I think there's a potential for him. I think if Jacob Cowing wins the punt returner job, he might get on the field more, and then you see that speed. And I think Christian Kirk, for the same reason. You know, everybody is talking about Mike Evans. Christian Kirk could kind of be the quiet addition who has, you know, maybe it's three or four big games, but, you know, if he has a big game, it means that he's you know, 33-yard catch and run, a touchdown, a 100-yard game. I think that he is a nice complement to what they have and should be a good pairing with Brock Purdy.
You talking up Jaden Duggar is just another blow to the Nick Martin fan club.
Nick Martin's another position. He's weak side. That's a totally different animal.
It's not totally different. They kind of do the summer's
love. This year it might be though.
Yeah. Okay, I hear what you're saying, but Nick Martin's having a hard time getting on the field, and they just kept adding linebackers. Barrow's just like, if you really like Nick Martin and you're really sure what you liked that he was going to show up this year, they wouldn't have kept adding linebackers. And all they did was add linebackers, not for sure line, you know, sure things, Pro Bowlers, but you sign Dre Greenlaw, you bring in Duggar, Romello Height, sort of, I'm sure it counts as a linebacker. Bring back Wallow. You got Gifford. Like, they got guys who all may or may not be either competing with Nick Martin for playing time or already ahead of him for playing time. So I know people ask me about Nick Martin all the time. And you're saying, I don't see him moving forward in this. And if you're not moving forward in their depth chart as a second-year player, it means you're usually going backwards. In that vein, my guy, for most surprising – most potential surprise, Jordan James. I've liked him since training camp. I think he's got something to him. I liked him in the few carries he got at the end of the year. He got some carries in the playoff game, right?
Yeah.
I just think he's got some zip to him that they could really use. You know, maybe Kalen Black becomes RB2. I think they'll look at him for that. It's going to be competition. Garendo's hurt, and we know that he's kind of been moved out of that competition. I think Jordan James, they like him. I mean, they made the decision that he was ahead of Garendo in training camp last year, even with James battling through an injury. So was Garendo. They just liked him better. I don't think he fumbles. I think they like him doing the kind of the basic stuff. And I think he's got some zip to him. We'll see how he is in like pass protection, obviously a huge thing. We'll see how he is catching the ball out of the backfield. I think he's okay at it. How will he be in games? I don't know. This whole, you know, get McCaffrey fewer touches. They've got to do it. They keep saying it. This time they have to do it. Jordan James, I think confidence in him would allow them to do it a little bit more. And I think he's getting out. He might get hurt again. Guys do tend to get hurt. Young running backs get hurt all the time. I don't know what he adds in the special teams. That might be another thing that makes it harder for him. But I just think he's got something. I don't think he's 1,000-yard back, but I think he's could be somebody you could see getting 5 to 7 carries a game and maybe burst, you know, go into the house on one of them. And they have not had that, you know, since it with the Mostert kind of just popped in there as a backup and then gave you so much juice at the end up as a starter. But they haven't really had that guy like, oh, my God, McCaffrey's out, but this other guy might go. And I kind of think Jordan James has got some chance. I think Shanahan kind of thinks that too. I really do. I just kind of get the feel that there's a confidence in him that you would not know because he certainly hasn't played very much. But I think he's got something there that they're going to want to kind of keep going with. So he'll get the first shot at it. I think he'll get the first shot at it. I really do. At being the backup running back, and the backup running back this year might actually for the first time be someone who gets 70 carries instead of 25, 30, 35. I think this could be someone who really, really lets them ease up a little bit on Christian McCaffrey.
I'm going to ask the question I'm sure anyone who's listening right now wants to ask you, which is, okay, why did they draft Kalen Black in the third round if they're that high on Jordan Jenkins?
Because they do that every year. That's why. Good point. But they do that every year. That's what they do. I think they drafted Kalen Black more to the point because Isaac Arendo is such a question mark in their minds. And then we found out he did get hurt. So you always need three barrels, right? You always need three tailbacks, certainly on this team. Special teams also. I don't think they're sold like this for sure is Jordan James. But I think, you know, and Kalen Black could beat him out. That could really happen, obviously. But I would just think that Jordan James does the stuff that I think an RB2 needs to do. It's like, do the basic stuff and feel like you're going to pop one. And maybe Kalen Black can do that. You know, time will tell if he can stay healthy. Jordan James, as you mentioned, and we keep hitting Kalen Black for this, is a lot younger than Kalen Black. So I think you and I are younger than Kalen Black. And I'll just say Jordan James. I'm just going to keep on the Jordan James train until I'm told I can't be anymore. And that might be years after we've all concluded that I was wrong anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I like Jordan James as a runner more than Kalen Black. I think that he's more dynamic than Kalen Black. But not everybody agrees with us on that. There were people who were watching that practice the other day who thought that Kalen Black looked great and looked super explosive and looked like the number two back on the team. I didn't quite see that. I think that James is a little bit quicker and can get down the field faster. I think that both of those guys, I mean, I wrote about that this week. That's going to be a very apparent, very public competition. I mean, both of those guys are going to get a lot of carries in the preseason. They're going to start, one of those guys is going to start the preseason game. So they're going to get opportunities. And so I think it'll be a fun one to watch. And we should know by the end of August, it should be obvious to us who the better, more valuable back is, who is that number two runner. So a good one to look forward to for training camp.
Many, many preseason stories will be written about these two guys because they're going to get a lot of carries. And you know what?
Are you Team James or are you Team Black? That's the question. You got to pick a side.
God knows, you know, it's going to come down to injuries, right, Barros? It always comes. It's going to somebody tweaks his hamstring in week two of practice, is out for 2 weeks, and the other guy's the guy. That's just the way it's going to be. All right, Barros, I think we did it. Anything else you want to bring up here?
No, other than we're about to go into a very quiet period.
Yeah, we might not be popping up here. Barros is going off to the World Cup.
I'm going to the USA-Paraguay game, and then I'm going to the Iran New Zealand game.
Yeah, Iran games are your kind of thing.
Yeah, so a country that we're at war at versus probably the most innocuous country. Like, does New Zealand have any enemies whatsoever besides, coyotes for their sheep and stuff like that?
And Peter Jackson, no, actually, he's a New Zealander.
Or so, orcs. No. I guess orcs are the...
Sauron? Sauron's in it. Sauron. All right. We may not have a show next. That's our way of saying we may not have a show next week. Who knows? Maybe we will. Maybe Barros will just do one on the World Cup. I don't know. Give your feelings on that.
I am going to put out my 49ers starting 11. Like if I had to build a World Cup team out of 49ers players, who would I pick? Just as a teaser, I've got George Kittle as my striker. So,
geez,
pretty darn good, I think.
I don't know about that. Eddie Pinero is going to take in your corner kicks. You know that.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. That is the show for today. Barros World Cup, me, many other things. We might be a little quiet for a little while, but we'll become storming back in soon enough. We'll be back. But that's why we did this long show full of off-season awards just for you, the listener. All right, everybody. See you.